Hello, my name's Dave Emery. Welcome to this segment of Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. We've been taking a look at, first of all, the Nazi and white supremacist tactic of infiltrating the police and military in order to acquire specialized knowledge and abilities, hence the title of the series, with which to overthrow the state. We've been taking a look at this tactic as practiced by European fascist groups, and we've been taking a look at this tactic as practiced by American fascist groups. We've also been taking a look at organizational similarities and operational connections between European and American fascists. I would also stress that we have been taking a look, in all probability, at connecting links and certainly ideological similarities between fascist elements within European governments and outside of those governments, and connections between fascist elements in this country's government, past and present, and fascist elements outside of the government. That, by the way, is a very important relationship. We're going to be taking a look at a comparison between the conservative revolution of Newt Gingrich and the Conservativa Revolution that took place in Weimar, Germany, later on in this particular series. I also would point out that we began by taking a look at the white supremacist presence in the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, two of whose members allegedly killed two black people in Fayetteville, North Carolina, possibly to earn a spiderweb tattoo, which in some white supremacist circles is a badge of having killed for the cause. We've taken a look at the Special Forces Underground, an explicitly anti-democratic underground within the very formidable U.S. Special Forces, and apparently based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We took a look at their offer to train militia groups. We've taken a look at evidentiary tributaries running between the Oklahoma City bombing and European fascists. We also have taken a look at the militia movement. We began by taking a look at the Oklahoma City bombing, or some aspects of it. We have taken a look at fascist connections within the militia, or fascist elements within the various militia movements. I would also point out that we left off with an examination of, among other things, connecting links between an alleged 1983 plot to blow up the Oklahoma City Federal Building, this by members of the Order and various other white supremacist elements, white supremacist groups, and elements that have cropped up in connection with Oklahoma City. The Elohim City compound of Robert G. Millar was home at one point to Andy Strassmeyer and James Ellison. Ellison was the state witness for the 1988 trial on the alleged 1983 conspiracy. James Ellison was at Elohim City. Robert Millar, the head of that white supremacist compound, was the fellow who claimed Richard Snell's body. Richard Snell was a participant, an alleged participant, in that 1983 conspiracy. He later was convicted of murdering a Texarkana pawnbroker and also a black Arkansas state trooper who had given him a speeding ticket. Richard Snell warned that, quote, look over your shoulder, justice is coming, unquote. And he was also championed by the March issue of the Taking Aim newsletter of the Militia of Montana, which issued a call to arms on behalf of Richard Snell. It is difficult to put an innocent construction on something like that, and I would also note that for those who simply dismiss the possibility of a militia role in Oklahoma City, that and the tactic advocated by militia groups at a militia conference of tracking the timetable and speed, rate of speed of Amtrak trains, this prior to the derailing of an Amtrak train in Arizona, allegedly by the Sons of the Gestapo, unquote. For those who would dismiss the possibility of a militia connection to Oklahoma City, and for those who regard the militias as a bunch of Boy Scouts, well, I challenge them to provide an adequate accounting for that. At the same time, I think that the Oklahoma City bombing may very well have involved some elements, note the use of the term elements, of the government in cahoots with elements of the militias. And indeed, I think, as I've indicated, the political rhetoric about Oklahoma City on all sides and the political rhetoric vis-a-vis the militias on all sides has been inadequate. To make a very long story very short, the rhetoric has been dichotomized, and the militias are presented on one side and the government on the other. The question has not been raised about whether perhaps the militias and the government are very much connected, and that some elements of the militias are in fact an extension of some elements of the government. And I believe that fascist elements within the government and within the militias are in cahoots and underlie many of these acts of right-wing terror. We have been dealing with, in fact, we have been excerpting and are continue to examine what, for my money, is the most thoughtful article about the militias. It comes from, of all magazines, High Times, a marijuana advocacy publication. Research credit on this to a listener. This is from High Times issue of November of 1995. The article is by Bill Weinberg, and it's headlined, "The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State?" And indeed, I think the title raises a very important question. The next element of the militia movement that we're going to look at, or the next aspect of it, I should say, that we're going to look at, concerns the anti-environmentalist aspect of the militia movement. And in our examination of this part of the militia movement, we're going to begin to see the degree of overlap between the militias and the government, hence, I think, the inadequate rhetoric on all sides. This segment of the article is entitled The Anti-Environmental Connection, Corporate Power in the Shadows? And again, I think Bill Weinberg is posing some very important questions vis-a-vis the militias. Are they really opposed to the government, or are they perhaps in cahoots with elements of the government, perhaps unwittingly in some cases? Are they really an extension of some elements of the government? The Anti-Environmental Connection, Corporate Power in the Shadows, reads as follows. None of this is to imply that the rank and file of the militia movement is monolithically neo-Nazi. Amen to that, I would interject. Indeed, the militia of Montana leaders could not have been such successful organizers if they hadn't played down the fascist rhetoric. With banks foreclosing on farms, jobs heading south of the border under NAFTA, and police forces trampling the Bill of Rights to enforce unjust drug and gun laws, Americans have legitimate reasons to be angry at their government. But powerful economic interests are poised to exploit this groundswell of anger. The big corporations are now aiming for a radical reversal of the gains made in environmental protection over the last generation. The advance guard in this struggle for the complete unshackling of corporate power from public oversight are the industry lobbyists who wrote NAFTA and the contract with America. Again, this last sentence. The advanced guard in this struggle for the complete unshackling of corporate power from public oversight are the industry lobbyists who wrote NAFTA and the contract with America. The rear guard are the county rule and wise use movements, a new sagebrush rebellion of ranchers and corporate interests in revolt against federal jurisdiction over lands across the West. These movements are increasingly armed and interlock with the militias. The feds have filed suit against Nevada's Nye County for claiming areas of the Toyabe National Forest and for threatening National Forest Service officials. Last July, there was a tense standoff with federal forest rangers when County Commissioner Dick Carver, backed up by an armed posse, bulldozed open a washed-out road in the Toyabe in defiance of orders to stop. Some 100 counties in the West have unilaterally claimed federal lands and threatened to arrest federal agents who get in the way of ranchers and miners. The Forest Service has issued official warnings to rangers throughout the West. The FBI has been alerted. 3 weeks before the Oklahoma blast, a bomb exploded in a Forest Service office in Carson City, Nevada. Hours later, pipe bombs destroyed a Forest Service outhouse in Elko County. A few days later, a threatening phone message left at the service's Toyabe office said, quote, "You're next," unquote. On Halloween night in 1993, someone tossed a bomb onto the roof of the Bureau of Land Management state headquarters in Reno. Much Bureau of Land Management land is leased to ranchers for grazing, while land in national forests is leased to timber companies for logging. Environmentalists see wanton plunder of the public trust and decry, quote, "welfare ranching," unquote, and "welfare logging," unquote. But the ranchers and loggers want federal limits on their activities overturned altogether. New Mexico's Catron County has joined Nevada's Nye at the forefront of the county rule movement. County Attorney James Catron has drawn up ordinances barring the feds from regulating lands in the county. To help write the ordinances, he called in Karen Budd, B-U-D-D, a longtime foe of environmental regulation who worked in the Reagan Interior Department under Secretary James Watt. She also worked in Watt's own anti-environmentalist organization, the Coors-funded Mountain States Legal Foundation, which defends corporations and developers. The Catron sheriff has threatened to arrest Forest Service personnel and has formed an armed posse of local ranchers to back him up. The October 1994 newsletter of the Utah-based National Federal Lands Conference, mouthpiece of the County Rule Movement, featured a lead article calling for the formation of militias, reprinting militia startup info provided by the Militia of Montana. The County Rule Movement interlocks with the Wise Use Property Rights Movement, which is underwritten by real estate, ranching, agribusiness, mining, energy, and timber interests. Giant corporations like Georgia-Pacific and DuPont are harnessing the anger of small property owners who really are struggling under costly and labyrinthine federal regulations to push through the political changes they need to further plunder the continent's land, water, and forests in the global free trade order. Western Republican leaders such as Senator Larry Craig of Idaho and Governor Fife Symington of Arizona have attended Wise Use meetings this year. Nye County's Dick Carver has been a featured speaker at both Wise Use and Christian Identity events. In March, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agents investigating the shooting of a wolf under the Endangered Species Act in Idaho's Lemhi County, L-E-M-H-I, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, beat a hasty retreat after Sheriff Brett Barraslew threatened to, quote, go to Plan B, unquote. A local rancher explained to the agents that that means calling up the militia. So again, in analyzing the militia movement, I think it is very important to note that, in fact, elements of the government, past or present, and elements of corporate America, which in my considered opinion is, along with the military, the dominant elements in this society, they basically control America, meaning the corporations and the military. I think the dichotomization of the militia into the government or anti-government is simply inadequate. And in fact, elements of the militias are in bed with and doing the bidding of elements of the government. And I think the overlap between the militia movement and the anti-environmental movement exemplifies the extent to which the militias are in fact in cahoots with some elements of the government, specifically those elements that represent big business. We will be noting later on in this series connections between the Republican right of Newt Gingrich and Pat Buchanan and the militia movement. Indeed, during Pat Buchanan's recent run for the Republican nomination, and by the way, I'm recording this in March of 1996, there has been more than a little press about overlaps between white supremacist organizations and the militia movement and Pat Buchanan. So again, I think in talking about the government and the militias, the rhetoric has simply been inadequate on all sides, and the extent to which the militias might indeed, or elements of the militias, I should say, might indeed be pawns of the government, is exemplified in the anti-environmental aspect of the militias, and indeed the anti-environmental stance of the Republican right and the corporate interests that they represent. Another very important connection between the militia movement, or a very important possible connection between the militia movement and the government, and this one is more than a little ironic, and that concerns the martial law contingency plans that have been on the books for quite some time. They had their genesis with Ronald Reagan's gubernatorial administration in California and contingency plans that were drawn up to intern upwards of 20 million blacks in concentration camps. Those plans were put together, as we have seen in numerous archive shows, about which I will have more to say in a moment. Those plans were put together at the California Specialized Training Institute by Louis Jufrida and Frank Salcido, both of whom jumped to FEMA in 1980 when Ronald Reagan became president of the United States. And as we shall see in the next segment of this particular article, the martial law contingency plans, which grew out of the vice president's task force on combating terrorism, that vice president being George Bush, those plans call for the deputization of paramilitary right-wingers in the event of any one of a number of crises. The next segment of Bill Weinberg's very telling article, The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State, is entitled The Martial Law Connection, subtitled Federal Spooks in the Shadows. The militias say that martial law is about to be declared in the USA as part of the UN conspiracy to take over the country. Militia units near the U.S. borders in Washington and Arizona have more than once scrambled for their guns, believing that rumors of military activity indicated an imminent UN invasion, only to find that it was the Border Patrol on joint maneuvers with the DEA. However, federal plans for martial law do exist. In 1984, National Security Council aide Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North drew up a plan with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to suspend the Constitution in the event of a U.S. invasion of Central America. Under the scenario, thousands of Central American refugees were expected to flood through the U.S.-Mexico border, and anti-war protests would erupt throughout the country. FEMA would establish detainment camps to round up refugees and protesters. FEMA carried out a, quote, readiness exercise, unquote, dubbed Rex 84 Alpha, in coordination with the INS and related agencies, mandated by an executive order signed by President Ronald Reagan. Word leaked out during the congressional hearings on Contragate in 1988, and a few articles on the scheme briefly appeared in the press. One of the first papers to break the story was the Liberty Lobby's The Spotlight. Again, that's The Spotlight, not to be confused with The Searchlight, the British anti-fascist publication. There is reason to believe that the radical right would be privy to inside information on the FEMA martial law plan. Among the groups participating in Rex 84 Alpha were the little-known state defense forces. Under the martial law plan, these groups were to be armed and, quote, deputized, unquote, by FEMA in the event of a national emergency. The state defense forces were created by state legislation at federal behest in 24 states across the country in the 1980s. National Guard troops were being sent down to Honduras at federal command to back up U.S. military efforts. If National Guard troops were then mobilized abroad, it was reasoned, an auxiliary force would be needed to take their place at home, especially to back up police in quelling, quote, civil disorder, unquote. The state defense forces sought recruits by placing ads in paramilitary and survivalist magazines. Consequently, many radical right elements were drawn to them. In 1987, the Utah State Guard, the state's self-defense force, was purged after investigators found that the Aryan Nations had infiltrated the group. The Salt Lake Tribune reported that state guardsmen were training at the Hayden Lake compound. The FBI opened an investigation into weapons thefts from the Toole Army Depot, where state guard officers were suspected of diverting arms to the Aryan Nations. Also in 1987, the Texas State Guard came under investigation. One battalion, led by Robert Holloway, H-O-L-L-O-W-A-Y, a former Vietnam Green Beret who had served as a mercenary for the white supremacist regime in Rhodesia, was disbanded for being too, quote, gung-ho, unquote, abandoning the standard green uniform for camouflage fatigues and engaging in search-and-destroy training. In 1990, the Virginia Defense Force was purged after state legislators discovered that units were engaging in similar, quote, gung-ho, unquote, activities, including trading for drug raids and planning to purchase a tank. Nonetheless, the following year, state defense forces in several states were mobilized to help keep order at home as National Guard troops were sent to Saudi Arabia for Operation Desert Storm. In California, an investigation by Assemblywoman, now Representative Maxine Waters, revealed that the state military reserve had drawn up a contingency plan calling for arming the force with National Guard M14 rifles and opening, quote, counterintelligence investigative files, unquote. Do the militias intersect with or infiltrate the state defense forces? Is the militia movement, for all of its hatred of the federal government, really a pawn in an internecine intrigue among the Washington elites? The Clinton gang, despite their support for NAFTA, prison expansion, and the death penalty, is perceived as a bunch of hippie peaceniks by the old gung-ho Cold Warrior faction of the Washington elite that held power during the Reagan years. Clinton is now the first and only president to have been jeered by the cadets when he addressed the graduation ceremonies at West Point. This kind of open alienation of military troops from their commander-in-chief is the necessary prerequisite for a classical coup d'etat of the sort which conventional wisdom maintains, quote, can't happen here, unquote. After the Oklahoma blast, a newsletter called The Resister, the official publication of the Special Forces Underground, was discovered in the library at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the Army base where Green Beret are trained, and Tim McVeigh was posted. Filled with bitter diatribes against Clinton and the Waco siege, The Resister is apparently produced by active-duty Green Beret. One recent issue included an open letter to the militia movement warning that an armed confrontation with the federal government would be premature. Quote, should the federal government decide to act against the militia groups and the militia groups stand and fight, they will not, in their current configuration, last 1 month, unquote, the issue read. It then went on to offer training in special operations for militias to prepare for the coming showdown. New York's Representative Carolyn Maloney is pushing legislation to halt the Army Civilian Marksmanship Program, which sponsors local shooting clubs and sells surplus arms and ammo through the National Guards. In the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing, Michigan militia members were expelled from the program at the state's Camp Grayling Armory. But Maloney alleges that, quote, 40 million rounds of ammunition have fallen into the hands of extremists, unquote. Given these connections, the militia's paranoia about FEMA and martial law plans may be based on inside information. And again, note this particular phrase, I think it's very telling. Given these connections, the militia's paranoia about FEMA and martial law plans may be based on inside information. Indeed, I wonder, too, about the telegram that was sent to Representative Stockman of Texas by Mark Kornke from Michigan. There is a dispute as to whether that actually occurred before the explosion or not. The journalistic coverage of that has shifted over the months since Oklahoma City. Also note the apparent advance warning, quote-unquote, note the quotes, of the derailing of the Amtrak train in Arizona. A militia group in Arizona claimed to have had prior warning about a month previous to that of some sort of government provocation to be staged in Arizona. One of the possibilities that I hold open with regard to these acts of terror is that, in fact, there is, as I believe, a considerable degree of overlap between elements of the government and elements of the militias, and that, in fact, the elements of the militias, fascist elements within the militias, and fascist elements of the government are in cahoots, and that the fascist elements in the militias are deliberately floating these stories of the government as a whole involvement in some of these incidents in order to deflect attention away from their own involvement in some of these incidents. Again, it is my opinion that right-wing terror incidents like Oklahoma City and the derailing of the Amtrak train in Arizona in all probability involve a collaboration between fascist elements in the government and fascist elements in the militias. And I think that those who would dichotomize the rhetoric and saying it's the militias or it's the government should think again. Continuing with this very important article, Black Helicopters Over America, Strike Force for the New World Order by Jim Keith, a militia propaganda potboiler published last year, may offer a clue. The book includes maps of the USA marking the 10 military bases designated as detainment camps under the FEMA plan. The book is also filled with specious rumors of Nepalese and Russian UN troops training in the national forests and bizarre cattle mutilations across the USA. But the bases marked on the map correspond to those which were actually designated by FEMA in 1984. By the way, for a more substantive treatment of the martial law contingency plans, I refer interested listeners to the archive shows RFA number 32 and RFA number 38, as well as a miscellaneous archive show dealing with the State Defense Forces here in the United States. And again, the similarity between the FEMA plans for martial law and the 10 regions set aside as detention centers are covered in that particular in those archive shows as well. Continuing with this particular article, the caption on the map informs us that two federal facilities have been designated as, quote, central processing sites for the mass roundup sites when martial law comes. The designated facility for coordinating mass detention east of the Mississippi, we are told, has, quote, not been identified at this time, unquote. The center west of the Mississippi is Oklahoma City. When the FEMA martial law plan was conceived, the domestic enemy being targeted was the Central American Solidarity Movement, and the plan was based on earlier ones such as Richard Nixon's Operation Garden Plot, which targeted the campus anti-war movement and black militants. However, in 1995, the Clinton administration is conveniently using the militia to justify beefing up the federal police state apparatus. The administration's anti-terrorist bill, written before the Oklahoma City blast and mostly aimed at foreign terrorist groups, would unleash special FBI powers against those suspected of supporting terrorism, further eroding the already besieged Bill of Rights. Americans in 1995 who are opposed to both fascist violence and police state measures, whether they come from Democrats or Republicans, are unfortunately being almost entirely left out of the political debate, and had better find ways to act before it is too late. Amen. And indeed, I think that those sincerely democratic elements within the militia movements had better think very, very carefully about whether they are perhaps being used as de facto agent provocateur, whether they are in fact being manipulated by the very government that they fancy themselves as opposed to. And again, I think they should also, by the way, consider the infiltration of militia groups by government agents who are simply there to monitor them, government agents who would deliberately like to maneuver them into acts of terror, and also by fascist elements who are infiltrating them in order to turn them into fascist terrorists and perhaps later fascist militia for ethnic cleansing. And indeed, I think the political rhetoric, as I have indicated, has been totally inadequate on all sides, and I believe that there is a considerable degree of overlap between elements of the militias and elements of the government, and those respective elements are fascist with a capital F. You heard a reference earlier in the broadcast to the archive shows. Those are a form of radio documentary that I put together over the years in which the printed sources upon which my lines of argument are based are read on the air, literally excerpted on the air. Those archive shows are available from a tape duplication service. More about that right now.
All of Dave Emery's archive shows are available from a tape duplication service named Archives on Audio. They can be contacted at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, zip code 94117-0023. The phone number is 415-346-1840. Again, Archives on Audio can be reached at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, 94117-0023. The phone number, 415-346-1840. There is also a catalog available which lists all of the archive shows, gives a synoptic description of each show, and cross-references the programs with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. The Archives on Audio catalog is available on the KFJC webpage, which is reached at http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/Emery. Again, the website, all lowercase letters, is http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/Emery. The website also has a suggested reading list and a list of other sources to pursue for more information on this field of research. Neither Dave Emery nor KFJC gets money from this arrangement.
That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.